What's up, homies? Logan Crowell here, founder of Home, helping our music evolve, Nashville's premier music hub. In this episode, I have not one guest, but three incredible music producers, Brad Dollar, Sean Giovanni, Greg Strizek. These guys have worked with everyone from John Legend to the Grateful Dead to Casey Musgraves. And this episode was originally filmed at Sean Giovanni's studio, The Record Shop, during the height of the COVID pandemic. It was obvious at that time that the role of the music producer was shifting, and we wanted to put together as much wisdom and knowledge as we could to just prepare producers and music creators in general to embrace the disruption that's going on in the music industry. And now with artificial intelligence, it's happening even more. So I wanted to bring this episode back out and share it with you. It's full of some amazing wisdom, not only for music producers, but for artists and for any entrepreneur who's working to build their career in the music industry. So check it out. If you love it, be sure to share it with a homie. Peace.
You're listening to Helping Our Music Industry Evolve, aka the Homie Podcast, where we bridge the gap between the traditional music industry and the new creator economy. I'm your host, Logan Crowell, serial entrepreneur and marketing nerd on a mission to empower music creators. Join me on this journey so that you don't get left behind in the new paradigm, and I'll show you why there's never been a better time to be in the music business. And now, let's dive in.
I'm here at the Record Shop with some good friends of mine, Brad Dollar, Sean Giovanni, and Greg Strizek. And the topic of this discussion is the evolving landscape of music production. So these are some guys who have seen music production evolve quite a bit already. So let's just kind of dive into your guys' background, so that everybody knows who's talking and some of the, you know, maybe you can mention some of the things that you've already seen change before now.
I'm Brad Dollar. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks guys for being here. Thanks Sean for the studio and Logan for putting this on. I'm a producer and engineer and coach to artists. I've been making records my entire life, thousands of credits in the studio, lots of people I've worked with and been with. Some of those are like, you know, as varied as Grateful Dead and like G-Eazy. I've also worked with Amazon and Airbnb and companies like Jack Daniels to find content and, you know, put strategy with artists. I started a music accelerator in Oakland, California in 2013 called Zoo Labs, specifically to teach business to artists and help them merge that with their career. And we're still going strong. Actually doing an accelerator right now. I have a lot of artists tuning in, I think, for that, which is awesome. And yeah, really, really happy to actually be present and sharing my craft and my expertise, not just in this moment, but in this time right now. It's very critical, I think, for all of us to sort of pool our collective knowledge together and find solutions to some very new problems. And at the same time, very excited for how things have been shaking up. I think that it's time for a change. It's time for a lot of new things to enter. And, you know, artists are the most primed to make that shift the smoothest and most beautiful. So I'm excited to be here doing that right now and here in Nashville and abroad and wherever you're at.
Awesome. I'm Sean Giovanni. I'm a sonic storyteller and the owner of the Record Shop Recording Studio, which we're hanging in today. I'm really passionate about helping artists achieve their artistic vision as we work through the process. And that's really my philosophy behind production and how I like approaching it. And through that, I like to think of our approach as just being a creative problem solver. And right now, there's definitely a lot of problems to solve and some creative ways to, you know, to work through it. And like right now, having an event, you know, in a studio, socially distanced apart, but still being able to have a conversation and share great information. And I really enjoy working with artists beyond the record and approaching the development of everything that has to do with building their content out to support their career. And I'm really, really excited about that. And I think that that's something that has continued to change and is a big part of why the Record Shop exists as it does, not being a traditional recording studio that just brings revenue in off of booking studio time. Our focus is on projects and relationships with artists. And I started my career thinking that way and working that way, as opposed to one gig leads to another sort of thing, thinking about how long term we can serve the clients and our community.
I love that, man. Yeah. How's it going, everybody? I'm Greg Strizek. I am an engineer and mixer and producer here in Nashville, lovely Nashville, Tennessee. And I've been around this town for, I guess, about 20 years now. And yeah, I'd like to say thanks, Sean, for having us. This place is amazing and really, really great. I'm just really excited to be with people in a room discussing music and discussing record making process. And I'm really excited to see what kind of roads we go down here tonight. And I'm stoked, man. So thanks so much for putting all this together, and Logan for putting all this together, man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for participating and sharing your knowledge with us. So you said that you've been in town for about 20 years or
yes, sir.
Yeah, and making records a little bit longer than that. Or is that around the time that you started?
It's about the time I started. Yeah. I went to school. I'm from Wisconsin originally, and I graduated college, got a music degree up there. And as soon as I got done with college, you know, it's that, to me, that's like the toughest year of your life, is like the last year of college, in the sense of, what do I do now? You know, to me, that was harder than like even leaving like high school. And so I made the move to Music City, kind of with an idea sort of that what I wanted to do, and a couple bucks in my pocket and a drum kit in the trunk. And here we are 20 years later, man. So they hadn't kicked me out yet.
Gio, how long have you been making records?
Man, since I was about 12 years old. I got really,
so you're about to tell your age now.
Yeah.
So how many years is that?
Yeah, 22 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I got really excited as a young kid about playing instruments, but then also I got really passionate about DJing. And then through DJing, I wanted to start recording some of the mixes that I was doing. So I got a little 4-track cassette recorder. And then I got really excited about the idea of recording bands and artists, and dove in more to the, you know, the engineering thing. But it was really just a fun thing that I enjoyed doing, and that turned into a career that I've been able to have a lot of fulfillment in.
Nice. All right, Brad, how long have you been doing this?
Actually, not that dissimilar from Sean. I was about 12 when I started doing it. I played music as a kid, but then when I got my guitar when I was 12, it just kicked it off. And like almost simultaneously, recording came into the picture, because I realized you could like put your guitar down like on a tape. I had like a little cassette recorder my mom used for work, for like memos and stuff like that. Not anymore after that, because I would just like record a riff onto it and then play over it, like, you know, solo over it. And that blew my mind. I was like, well, I wonder if I could do that, you know, on like, you know, on a whole record kind of thing. I wonder if I can do a whole band like that. And so I would say like 15 or 16, I was like, you know, having bands come to my grandma's house to record, and, you know, buying, you know, saving like lunch money to go buy like recording equipment. So got pretty, pretty like set in that. And yeah, been doing it ever since.
Right on.
So there's obviously a ton of experience sitting up here. Experience producing in a lot of different settings, a lot of different studios. This is a gorgeous place right here. I know you helped run TRI Studios out in
Shout out Bob
Bay
Weir.
Area, which is Bob Weir's studio, for a long time.
Oh, wow.
You ran a Greg, you ran a studio here in town for several years as well, right?
Sure did, yep.
Okay. So all that kind of being said, you know, whenever you were first, so real quick, homeschool is really focused on helping people get the skills they need to build a business doing what they love. It's not just about learning how to EQ the kick drum or learning how to make a beat or something like that. We may touch on that occasionally, but it's really meant to be a sort of holistic conversation and support system for people to grow a business doing what they love to do, which is what you guys have successfully done. And that's a very hard thing to pull off for anybody. And, you know, to make it even more complicated, where, you know, I'm sure when you guys started, it was basically the huge push into, you know, digital recording and Pro Tools and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And you had to learn all of that. And now here we are sitting in a room and we've got to learn, you know, live streaming gear and all of this different stuff, right? So there's obviously a ton of technical challenges and learning and everything that goes along with it. But in regards to somebody who's like setting out to build their business, or maybe they're already building it a little bit, but, you know, they still feel like they're kind of grinding to get to where they want to be. You know, maybe this is where you guys were, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago or whenever it is that you really kind of, you know, went at it full force and you were like, I'm never stopping until I make this thing happen. Right. So what, if you could go back and talk to yourself at that particular stage in the game and give yourself a little bit of advice, what would that advice be? And hopefully, you know, it stands the test of time, you know, according to what we're looking at right now, right?
Brad, you want to start?
Yeah. I'm the long-winded one, so they know they can just look to me to start talking. I think that, like, the most important thing as you start to cross the barrier from just being an artist into being an artist entrepreneur is that you have to just accept the business stuff is going to come up. You're going to have to embrace it. You're going to have to do like salesy stuff and write emails and pick up the phone. And it like, it, especially in the beginning, it really detracts from the creative process. You're like, now I just put all this creative energy I had into like building a website. Now I just don't want to do that. I just want to, you know, hang out and play at that time, Star Wars Battlefront 2 on PlayStation, right? I just like, forget it. I just want to chill out. But that part, that picking up the phone, writing the emails, trying to figure out what a business plan looks for you, even as an artist, I think those things are the things we have to spend time on because they take just as much time to get good at as playing music, making music, producing music, getting good at building business models and building budgets and, like, you know, making cold calls. Like, that's a skill. It takes time. And I think that, you know, it's very easy as a creative to just be like, I'm just going to focus on the art. And that's an awesome dream to have. I just think the reality of it is that you're going to have to carry yourself for a while before anyone ever steps in and just says, no, you're cool. Just do the art. You're going to have to do that for a long time yourself. And the further reality is once you've been doing it for a while, you're going to be like, well, you know, I like doing the business. I like that I'm in control. I like that this is my business, my empire I'm building around what I'm creating. So I think just like leaning into the sort of monotonous stuff now so you can build systems that work for you and they can grow with you as you pivot and you change as an artist.
Cool. That's an awesome answer. Sticking with that for a second in thinking about the, you know, the business and kind of the theme of what we're talking about, the evolving landscape of music production. In this current situation, how has your, you know, what you do day to day kind of evolved bit on the business side? And what are some tips maybe that we could give to the people listening to reapproach their business right now in the sort of current condition that we're in and make sure that they're still able to kind of push it forward a little bit?
Sean.
Yeah. I would say that, and I think that you guys can agree that foundationally, the approach has not changed at all. And the approach is problem solving for creatives to be able to find creative solutions to help artists build their business, build their brand, and create really great records. So as producers who are naturally like the problem solvers that are putting together this vision that the artist has and then getting on record, also producers that are business oriented, we're already thinking in that way. If you have an entrepreneurial mindset, you're always thinking about what's sort of like the next coming thing that we can get on to be able to help expand what we're doing and be able to support our clients in a stronger way. So foundationally, it hasn't really changed. It's just kind of more of the same. Just the landscape is a little bit different. And so now we're thinking creatively about how to do things where we're more spread apart, which is a very challenging thing to do in an environment or in a business that's very intimate. We have really close relationships with the people that we work with and they feel most comfortable being in the room with you. And so that's definitely been a challenging transition. But my suggestion for people that are maybe even trying to break into the industry right now is not to look at it as a horrible time that there's not any opportunity because, you know, studios aren't open or people have to be separated. And, but to think there is incredible opportunity to come up with creative ways to be able to move things forward. And when I moved to town, it was in 2006. It was a very challenging time for the music industry. I moved here to work at a major studio in town, and that job fell through after I got here. And I never got hired at a studio. I never even had an internship. But the landscape was very challenging in Nashville, especially.
In general.
But in the music industry as a whole, you know, it was a challenging time. And what I learned through over the course of the few months of just trying to figure things out as a kid that was on my own trying to get my career going, was that we have to find a way one way or another if we want it bad enough. And so if you've decided that already, that that's what you want, then you just have to think creatively about how to serve people in a unique way. And so right now we're doing that in very unique ways. That's why we're sitting here with this whole streaming setup that we just installed in the studio to be able to help artists be able to continue to play shows and reach out to their fans and create really great content in an effective way. And we've all been hanging on Zoom doing remote sessions and working with artists. And so when this happens, you just, when any sort of adversity happens, I think that as creatives, we have to look at it as like, we're creative. Let's find a creative solution and look at it as an opportunity to grow. Not necessarily a situation that's happening to us that we have no control over the growth from.
Yeah. I love that. Did you have something to add, Greg?
Well, I was going to say, I agree with Sean in the sense of, I think fundamentally, what we do hasn't changed at all. I mean, for me, it's always been number one about relationships, you know, is building trust with clients and stuff. And especially from day one, I remember starting out, it's like, you know, I didn't have anything as far as like a studio or anything. And I wanted to kind of learn and hone my skills and stuff as far as in the studio and whatnot. But I did know some people that own studios, and things like that. And so I met like a band, who like wanted to record, and I said, well, I can do that for you, you know, not knowing anything, you know, and for free went in and booked, you know, or talked my buddy into letting me go in, and that's just how you learn, you know? And so I guess what I'm trying to say, long story short, is if you, basically hone your craft, get really good at your musical, the creative side of things. You know, the business stuff comes, you know, you can always learn how to do a business plan. You can always hire a tax accountant. You can always like learn how to do budgets and stuff. I think that stuff comes later, and it's obviously really, really important stuff long-term if you want to do this as a career. But I think fundamentally, if you're true to the art and stuff, I think all that stuff comes if you are inherently entrepreneurial.
Awesome. So I just want to like unpack or recap a lot of the stuff that was just said, because there's a lot of important things I think that people should take away that maybe we shouldn't just gloss over. But, you know, the fundamental job of the producer being to bring the artist's vision to life, right? And right now there are these constraints, but I've heard it said by some, very talented people that sometimes constraints can actually be a strength to you, that if Amen. if you have too many options, too many possibilities, that it can actually sap your creativity, because all your mental energy is going to making those choices versus going, okay, what do we have? How can we make the best possible thing with what's here? So I think that's a really, you know, important concept for people to think about is, you know, like you said, the relationships are there, right? The artists, if anything, are probably easier to get to and easier to talk to now than they are under normal circumstances. So then it comes down to the tools that you have to be able to help them bring their vision to life, right? And whether those tools can be done remotely or whether there's a way to get them in the room and, you know, get some gear to do live streaming or however it is that it's being done. But the sort of other piece to that I heard was the mindset part, that like, if you kind of believe that that's your purpose and that's what you're all about, and that you're just going to kind of throw yourself into the fire and figure it out along the way, and you're gonna make sure that it gets done, right? So just like you kind of threw yourself into a situation, you know, back in Track Your First Band without really understanding everything that you needed to do that,
right?
You know, there's probably somebody sitting out here that's like, man, I would love to be able to do a remote writing session with somebody, or I would love to, you know, be able to figure out how to, do live streaming and stuff like that. And, you know, they're probably intimidated by it, but ultimately if that's the constraint right now, then the job of the producer is somehow still to work within those constraints and still be able to bring that artist's idea to life, whatever that looks like. Right.
Right.
So,
I think that's just the nature of being a producer in general, because you're going to have to evolve with your artists. Like, the artists I started working with when I was 15 are not, they don't even make the same kind of music as they made 5 years later versus now, like almost 15, 20 years later. So I think that as a producer, we have to just like always be in the mindset of picking up new skills, whether that's like, okay, I need to learn Ableton this year. Like when I picked up Ableton 5 years ago, changed my life. Been working on like tape and Pro Tools, and like I'd done Sonar and some Logic before, but you know, it still like was a little daunting, but you still pick the skill up. And that skill allowed me to work with more artists. I made better music. I made more of the stuff I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times as producers, the things that we are like, we feel like maybe challenged by are usually really, really good for us, because as Sean said, it's about trying to find solutions to other people's visions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the artistry is. So, you know, like I'm going to call producers artists a lot, because you're creating an environment for things to transpire that are relative to that individual, which is kind of like magic, right? You're like pulling something out of someone else's head, and like it's already intangible, and you're making it this thing like millions of people can listen to over time and space. So it's pretty powerful stuff. So I think just understanding that same mindset and then applying that to all the stuff you're gonna have to pick up, you really, as a producer, you're beholden to be the sort of like thought leader in your community and in your collective to, you know, be awesome at music, be awesome at business, be awesome at being a creative. And it's a lot of hats to wear, but that's the job you picked.
You got to be like the Swiss Army knife, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, man, that's good stuff. I want to dive into a question that I think was, you know, when we were first talking about putting this event together, it was one of the things that I thought would be extremely beneficial for people. So the question is how to stand out. You know, how to stand out from the competition. Like you mentioned earlier, Gio, the competition is fierce in the music industry in general. And then you go to a city like Nashville or another really competitive type music city, and you realize, wow, I'm another awesome musician or awesome producer. You know, it's like there's so many. You know, for those people again that are really getting their sort of business off the ground right now, and you know, maybe they're figuring out how to reach out to artists in this time, or figuring out how to actually still get projects going, you know, without going to their normal mixer or whatever it is. You know, what are some ways that people can stand out and maybe pitch themselves and get some better clients? And I'll let you start on this one, Gio, because you had a really awesome answer last time we talked about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I think something that was a long process for me to figure out. And so I can look back on it now with a lot of clarity, but I had no idea when I was starting out. And what I've come to determine is like one of the strongest solutions for that, to be able to figure out how to stand out and then grow a sustainable career in this industry, is to define a niche and then diversify the value that you can offer to someone within that niche. I think that a lot of us talk about the fact that we have to wear a lot of hats. And I hear a lot of people say, you know, in order to survive in the music industry, you got to just kind of be able to do all kinds of things these days. But then you hear the other side that says, well, you should really be a master at something specific. And, you know, and so there's a little, you know, differentiation between that. But I think both sides are actually true. And that's been my experience. When I moved to town, I started contacting studio managers, producers, engineers, trying to find work as an assistant, work as an intern at a studio. And I contacted them the same way that 95% of the people contact me now as a studio owner, by saying, hey, I just graduated from this school. Here's my really great grade point average. I have all these certifications that I did through school. I'm really passionate about, music. Do you have any opportunities for me? And I'm willing to do anything. And it's awesome to be willing to do anything, but to know what you're really good at is a very specific, skill that I think is essential to be able to start finding opportunities, either to work for someone else or to just find your own clients. And I started to discover that through a couple scenarios that happened. There was one session that I was allowed to come and sit in on and just kind of hang out in the back of the room. And this engineer let me watch their tracking session. And some point during the day when they were cutting vocals, they had comped stuff together and they needed to fly around some parts like through the section, which if you're not familiar with that, you copy and paste different sections from one song, from one point in the song to another point in the song. And so I said, yeah, sure, I can jump up and do that for you. And he went out to grab some coffee, and I did it pretty quickly, much quicker than he would have thought that someone would get it done, or faster than he could have gotten it done. And he was a veteran engineer that spent most of his amazing career working on tape machines, and like Pro Tools was kind of a new thing to him. Pro Tools was almost all that I knew as a young engineer that was just getting started out. So I was fairly quick in that. And that was something that I had excelled in through school as well. But I'd never really recognized that as being a skill set. I just, or a unique skill set. I just saw that as being like necessary. And so in this scenario, that guy thought that was cool. And he asked me, you know, how I did it. And I gave him some stuff, but that never led to a job. What was awesome was the manager that was sitting in the back of the room came up to me after the session and said, "Hey, I have this, project that I need some, editing done on. We were about to send it off to mix. Do you have somewhere that, that you could work on this, you know, for me?" He's got, "I got the hard drive in my car. I just needed to, you know, to knock it out." And the guy we were going to work with was booked or something. So I said, "Yeah, I got this little apartment studio down the street, and, we can come over and we'll set it up." So I did the edits for him, and it ended up becoming my first credit on a major record. And that was just this crazy thing that happened a few months after I'd moved here, after, my idea of what my career trajectory was going to look like in Nashville, moving here for a job and things like not working out the way you expect them to, and then being really like punched in the face, and you see how you just really stepped up to the big leagues and you're still kind of like a little league baller, you know? And so it was a really eye-opening experience where I recognized that I needed to start telling people what I was passionate about and what I was good at that was different than maybe someone else. And so the conversations that I started having with people completely changed. And now my introduction to a studio manager was, I'm a recent graduate. One of the things that I excelled in was Pro Tools editing. I worked through these certifications very quickly. And I was wondering if you could ever use any help with just someone, extra set of hands on deck to be able to help with Pro Tools operation, cleaning up sessions, doing any editing or, you know, preparing stuff. And all of a sudden I started getting more emails back, and now I was getting conversations because I had came to them with a specific solution that I could provide for them. And it never led to a full-time gig, and I'm glad that it didn't, because it forced me to kind of work for myself, and I'm passionate about the freelance career. But what it did lead to was a lot of really great opportunities for me to learn and connect with people. Then fast forward a little bit, I started to recognize that having these little skill sets was great, but if I wanted to have the type of impactful career that I envisioned since I was a young kid, it was going to be really necessary for me to diversify how I could serve the artist, because there's only so much that you can get done in the hours that we have in the day focusing on that one specific thing. And so my idea of how to diversify that was to become a resource for the artists that I work with to help them develop other types of content that would support the records that we were working on. And then that grew into a multifaceted production company that could then serve clients in a wide variety of ways and allow me the freedom to be able to focus on projects that I want to work on and do what I love doing for a living, just producing, but being able to have these other types of projects that would come through our business that I would bring on other experts in those specific skill sets, like videography and photography and website design and marketing. And so I would act as a project coordinator to help artists with that, but I have experts that do each one of those things rather than trying to become a jack of all trades. Yeah. And so that was my solution. And I think that can apply to someone that is maybe an entrepreneurial producer like us, or even someone that just has one thing that they really enjoy doing, like a mixing engineer, for example. And a mixing engineer could serve their artists or clients in a more diverse way, by maybe educating them through the process as they're going through revisions and showing them, you know, kind of, this is how I'm doing something rather than just doing it. Cause a lot of artists are recording at home. So now imagine how much more invaluable you become as a mixing engineer, because your clients are not only getting a great product from you, but they're learning along the way. And now they're able to deliver better products to you for you to mix. So it's going to make everything more efficient, and you're developing a deeper relationship with them. And so I invite people to start to think about those specialties that really set them apart and lead with that as what makes them unique. And then find some special things within that to where you can add more value within that specific niche. And I found that to be a really powerful way to help build a career.
That's awesome.
Love that, man.
Bingo.
Real quick, before we go to someone else with a question, what you're saying, you know, makes so much sense in terms of, you know, right now artists are, you know, going, okay, crap, I need to learn how to record myself, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can be that, you know, let that teacher, or even just kind of let them into what you're doing to a level that most mix engineers wouldn't do, that's a way to build a much stronger relationship with that person that would end up, you know, probably, like you said, kind of pouring so much value into their career that it becomes more of a, you know, a long-term client. the first part of what you said was awesome too, that I just want to kind of reiterate, which is you basically, you found a niche, a very specific thing to where you, when you're pitching yourself, it wasn't too broad. Like, hey, I'm willing to do anything for anybody. It was like, this is specifically who I am. This is specifically what I'm really good at. Do you need that? And then what's awesome about that is that then you can, if somebody says no, but you've been really nice to them, you can go, well, do you know anybody that does?
Absolutely.
And in a town like Nashville, I can't speak for other places. But people will legitimately go, yeah, actually I probably do.
Right.
I'll do you a couple email intros, you know? So I think that those are both really, really great pieces of advice. And then the one final thing before we move on is the equivalent of you like learning all of your shortcut, you know, your Pro Tools shortcuts and all of that, and being able to edit really quickly. It's almost like somebody today learning some of this, you know, live streaming technology or something like that, as, you know, hey, this is, you know, everything's moving into multimedia production. And although live streaming is extremely complicated, the ability to, you know, create your final product live saves you so much time in post, right? That you, so it ends up, even though the gear is expensive and there's a big learning curve for learning all of it, it creates this additional layer of value because the way your rig is set up, you're archiving the audio, you're archiving the video. People could go, if this was a live show, people could go back and remix it, chop it down, edit it out later. So you have a live performance, plus you have, you know, a sort of stack of content that you could go back and work with. So in the same way that you position yourself, for some of those old school cats who were coming out of tape and trying to move into Pro Tools, somebody that's listening could maybe position themselves for the old school cats that are in Pro Tools. Like, damn, dude, now I got to learn, you know, OBS and all the, you know, ATEM switcher stuff.
That's exactly right. It's always going to be something like, you know, like a 17-year-old right now who masters the live streaming setup when they're 47 is going to be something else.
Yeah.
It's just the progression of technology. And so the sooner that you realize it's going to keep progressing, you just have to turn that thing, instead of working that thing in your brain that allows you to like quickly pick things up, your willingness to try things. And also to what Sean said, it's like, you know, his resourcefulness allowed him to continue to say yes. And I think that we oftentimes are like, no, I don't want to do that because it's not a good fit for me. But to what you just said, it might not be a good fit for you, but for someone you know that's really close to you, that you might give them something that's really powerful in their life, and they give you that favor back. And I think that all of these solutions we're going to talk about and have been talking about are people-centric. It's like the relationships are everything.
Absolutely.
And I just want to, one last thing about what you said about your email was that you were specific to the people. Maybe you had like a template you were bouncing off of, but it was like you were like being specific to the people you were writing. And I think that's the most important thing we can do as we're reaching out, is to be like to tailor ourselves to the individuals we're writing. We all get mass messages and we're like, no, dude, I don't even care. Even if it's good and the artist is awesome or the opportunity is great, you're like, I can tell that you didn't write this. And just even showing a little bit, like if you write a studio and you're like, oh, I see these producers, but they don't have any editors, right? Or right now, if you email a studio as a producer, you're like, I see that you don't have any live streaming people. It's the same thing. So just seeing where you can help them out, where you can provide them value. And that goes for your audience, your fans, your artists, industry people. Just what are you going to do for folks? Because ultimately, like, you're trying to get them to reciprocate that same value to you.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So kind of continuing with that a little bit, Greg, I heard you mention relationships and that kind of being the sort of fundamental driver in your career. And I would, you know, obviously we just kind of came full circle there to that. Can you kind of tell us about a defining moment of when, you know, you were able to leverage those relationships, or maybe you ended up in your first room with a big client, and kind of like what that was like, maybe some advice for people who, you know, are kind of moving into that realm of working with bigger artists, and maybe a little bit of advice for them.
I do actually have, remember a kind of, for lack of a better word, like eureka moment I had long ago, where I was kind of in my groove. I was kind of had clients and stuff, and were working, and I guess maybe my self-confidence was a little bit down still because I was green a little bit yet. But all of a sudden I realized people were turning to me and asking me the question. Like, all of a sudden I was the guy that they turned to, and I was the guy that actually had the answer. And that gave me a lot of confidence and early on. But I think to what Sean was saying earlier, I mean, that's, you know, you carve your niche and you kind of get really good at what you do, that side of things. And even though you don't realize it, you can still gain a lot of confidence in yourself from that. And that's when I first started realizing that these people are actually asking me what we should do next. You know, what do you think? What path should we go down and stuff? Which is really what a producer does, you know. So that for me was a eureka moment. You know, if that's kind of what you're asking, I don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, I think, a great point. Just basically that moment where all of a sudden you realize that you're, you know, sort of driving everything, and that it's, well, there's a couple pieces to that, I guess, because on one hand, it's that level of trust that was given over to you right. by the artist, right? Where all right. of a sudden it's like, wow.
Right.
This artist feels like they can fully trust right. what I'm doing enough to just go, well, what do right. you think?
And then
can you tell me what to do? Because I'm kind of stuck.
Right. Know? Right. And that's awesome. That's actually the main thing I love about just the record making process and stuff. And that's maybe something I think we may be lacking a little bit, even as opposed to even 10 years ago. I feel like we should creatively in the studio, we should push each other. We should challenge each other, you know, and I think it's okay to disagree with somebody on something when you're talking about like the artistic part of it. In other words, if you have an idea, you know, I love when I do a mix for somebody and they tell me things they want to fix, you know, and I absolutely do not like when I send a mix to somebody and they say, oh, I love it. It's great. Let's go to the next thing. I go, we're not leaving. I say, you tell me four things that's wrong with this right now. Cause we're not leaving. Cause this is, to me, it's just a draft right now. I mean, I just kind of built this thing. I framed this thing up, you know, how I think it should be. But I mean, I'm definitely missing something, you know, I'm not the end all be all, you know, this is a collective thing. And that to me, as far as record making goes, being in a room with people or working on projects with people, working with the artist, you know, that's how you get good stuff. And it's better than it ever could have been if you just lock yourself in a closet somewhere and just mix, you know. In other words, if people are giving you, for lack of a better word, like friction, you know, it's like challenging you, you know. That's what I always loved about just music in general, even like playing an instrument or like playing in a band, you know, like a kick-ass band, the guys in the bass player is going to challenge the drummer, you know, they're going to push each other to play better, you know, and the band is just better. It's the same thing in the studio making a record or like even producing a vocal on somebody, you know. Vocalists get, you know, they get worn out. I think singing in the studio is one of the hardest things to do, just mentally, you know, and that person is, they're bearing it all out for you, you know, they're bearing their emotions out, you know, and they get frustrated. You do have to guide them, but a lot of times, you know, they'll come out of the booth and I'll be like, go back in there, man. You're not done. We're four takes away from this thing yet. And they don't like it. And they're mad. And there's true friction there, you know. But I think by doing that, that is really how you win people over as far as like building their trust, because they'll go back in there and they'll give you four more vocal takes and they'll go, wow, I didn't realize I was even capable of that. This is way better than what I even thought it could even possibly be. And that's what we do.
What you just said brings up a thought that I have about that can, you can take that same perspective of setting the bar and then raising to it to your individual career as well, because it's right clear that you already have that mindset. So you're not going to settle for anything less than like the best thing that you can do. And as in a very competitive market and as a creative, you know, person that's assisting the artist with the technical side of things, we have to hold ourselves to that highest standard, because there's somebody right now that is probably trying to hitchhike to Nashville to take our job and is willing to jump in the car with a stranger just to get to town and be able to just crash on somebody's couch and figure out a way to be able to be the next best, you know, thing in town. That's the beauty of like living in a place that people want to come to be able to create the best. That level of competition raises the bar for everybody, right, and it raises the standard that we work at.
Right.
But I think we talk about that a lot when we're talking about a relationship between two people, but we don't talk about it a lot when we're talking about the relationship with ourselves. And sometimes I don't think we go hard enough on ourselves for how the standard that we set. And so people ask like, well, how can I build like you know, stronger resilience, or how can I become more consistent, or I'm not really good with like time management, and just they leave it at that, like I'm not good, instead of putting in the effort to do it. So the same way that you talk about that relationship with an artist, we can set those standards for ourselves.
That's good.
And then hold ourselves accountable to them and go after them. That just made me think of that.
Yeah, I know. I love that. You're so absolutely right.
Another one.
Yeah. Another one.
Yeah. You got it. There's more beyond. I totally agree with that, especially in the studio. Every single artist from like garage band to like Bob Weir, like there's a sense of like, you're so excited to record first take. Oh, we got it. It's like, you might've got it, but there's still more in there. There's like there's more in the tank. You got to at least drain it. It's going to fill back up. You got to see what else is there.
Right.
I think it's the same thing with us as creators and producers and entrepreneurs and business owners. We have to keep seeing like, what's the other thing? Like what can I push more for? Cause there, right. you don't, I think to what Greg said, you know, we're thought leaders at a certain point, like, you know, we're the ones who are sort of calling the shots. We're having the vision, but we still need that sort of mentorship. We still need right. someone to bounce ideas off of. And so you can either push yourself and be your own mentor or find someone to help mm-hmm. you do that. But you definitely got to like push where you've been. Cause otherwise you're kind of just always stagnant, swimming in the same thing. And that's, right. that's dangerous.
And to your point, Brad, too, it's like, okay, the first take was great. Let's do four more. If they're not great, you can always go back to the first okay. take. You know, it still exists. Yeah.
Record more than you erase. John Cutler.
That's great.
That's awesome. Again, I love all these like little nuggets. So I'm trying to fish them back out and then repackage them and send them back in case people are, you know, missing some of this. So going back to what Greg was saying first, the relationship is built on trust, but the trust is kind of built on confidence, basically. It's like you attained a level of confidence that then started rubbing off on people, or people started feeling that in the studio with you, then started looking to you for the answers. And that's when that trust was built. And that's when you can begin to kind of push back on them and say, hey, go, you know, go right. four more takes or whatever it is. Right. right? So I think that's an important distinction for people, is to build that level of confidence, whatever it takes, you know, whether it's the actual, like you're confident in your own skills, but it's the verbal communication that sometimes gets people uncomfortable, or whether it's really just knowing your shit, right? So like being able to count or be, you know, in music theory a little bit so that you can really hang with the session musicians and stuff like that. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, I can see how that's hugely important in terms of as you're working with bigger and bigger clients, right? And if that level of confidence isn't there, that relationship's not going to work. Right. Cause these are people a lot of times with probably pretty big egos, right? And so I think that the best, you know, the best sort of teamwork situations, you know, are ones where you can allow the egos to be in the room, and you can work around them. If the person's got that level of talent, you know, and this goes for a business relationship as much as it does for artist producer relationship, but if they have that level of talent, you know, then that trust, you know, is going to be absolutely essential to being able to make that happen. And then yeah. what I heard from Gio was, you know, basically the fixed versus the growth mindset. So, when people go, oh, I'm not very good at that. Well, I'm not very good at the communication, or I'm not good at keeping up with my emails. Right? Yeah. Well, nobody is at first, right? Nobody's good at, you know, I hear all the time, because once you're kind of in the business, you have to live by a calendar to some degree. And this is another thing that people have to kind of get used to whenever they're first starting to live and die by their calendar and by their appointments that are on their calendar. I got a phone call with this person, and I got a meeting with this person, or right now it's all Zoom conferences or whatever. But you're right. People do go, oh, well, I'm just not good at that. And it's like, okay, there's a term for that in psychology called fixed mindset versus growth mindset. And for some reason, a lot of people are operating from this fixed mindset that they weren't born with that capacity. it's not necessarily about whether or not they can develop that capacity or how long it would take or how much they would have to buckle down, because you may not be naturally, you know, inclined to operate that way, but you know, how did you learn to play the guitar? If you're, you know, a guitar player, just repetition, like it didn't, you, nobody just picks it up and goes, oh yeah, I know all the chords, you know, you gotta like repeat it over and over again. So I think what you're saying, Gio, too, as far as like really pushing yourself to, you know, be excellent essentially, right, is super important. So, how much time did we have? What we had on the stream? We're halfway through. Cool. Mm-hmm. So the crux of being a producer is being productive, right? You have to get things done.
Right.
So I see this a lot as this sort of bird's eye view of overlooking a community of creative people, where people start a lot of projects. They start a lot of projects and a lot of times they don't get things done, or they end up with so many things that are started, they don't know which one to finish, or, you know, maybe they just get uninspired, you know, maybe like you said, if they're, you know, putting up their website all day or whatever, but just like, what are, you know, we can go around to each one of y'all and maybe give one or two of your best kind of, you know, thoughts around productivity. You got something?
I can go ahead. Yeah. Man. Well, I was going to say it's a very timely of you to ask that question, because a lot of you maybe have saw, like I did, the BMI sent out an email. There's an article about that exact thing, about how you need to finish. Well, it was from a songwriter perspective, and they're talking about you need to finish your songs, you know, and what does that mean exactly? And I believe there's a quote from Bob Dylan in that article that said something like, I'll paraphrase, but something like, the worst thing about being a songwriter is abandoning an idea and then coming back and having to try to remember where I was with it. You know, it just basically makes it more difficult for you to finish, you know, and that's where, like, kind of what you were saying about people get intimidated or it's daunting or whatever to try to finish stuff. But I think it's really important to, and I can, it's important to finish, I was going to say, but from a, like a mixing standpoint, like if I do a mix for somebody, you know, it's like, it may not be 100% done. That's why also, like I was saying before, I want feedback for people on that, but I just need to kind of get a frame up, get it started, you know, and then we can go down the road and we can finish it, you know, but, well, we all know you never actually finish a mix. You just abandon it, but, but I mean, that's, it holds true. I mean, again, for every aspect, like songwriting, mixing, making it, producing a track, making a track from scratch, you know, all these things, you know, I think it kind of, all that kind of holds true, but it's funny you say that, 'cause I was just reading that article today.
Yeah. Have a, get the framework in, right? Like if you're writing a song, you know, if you, the intro in the first verse are dope and you get it to a great chorus and it's dope, just, even if it's just copy and paste the same pattern, so it's like twice and you have a 2-minute long version, at least you have a version of like a thing to listen to and to riff off of. And I think that what's more important is progress, not perfection. And like with music, we're so like focused on, let me get the thing done before like I even like think it. And like, that's just not how it works. Any top pop song, just go on the chart, like, and this will stand the test of time, what I'm about to say. Like there are groups of people around those pieces of music. There's mixers and producers and engineers and writers. This goes back to like the beginning of the recording industry. Mm-hmm. Whatever's at the top, there's a lot of people around it. And it's not just because it's popular or well-funded. It's because it's kind of what people know it takes to get that level of input. Like Steve Jobs invented the iPhone, but he didn't make the iPhone. He didn't figure out the different circuitry or the upgrades or the iOS or any of that stuff, but it's still like it's part of it. So I think just getting more focused on getting off the starting line than trying to like win the race every time. I think that's the most important thing that we can do.
Amen.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that idea of just do it now. I remember when I was young, there was a book, Russell Simmons' book that I was reading, and one of the chapters was just do it now. And, you know, the example was just, if you have something that you want to start, an idea, you know, to go after, a change in your life or lifestyle or anything that you want to do, there's nothing stopping you from making that decision right now in the moment. And we have a limited amount of time when our brain processes an idea and then decides to make a decision on it. And if you move forward with it, it can definitely like jolt that productivity. The way that I work through developing time management is something that has kind of evolved into something that I call a prosperity plan as opposed to a schedule. And the reason for that is that I combine my schedule with my long-term and short-term goals. So I was inspired to put together a list of longer goals after I read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Yes.
It's incredible, like, you know, classic book that just really changes your mindset on what can be accomplished with what you're going to go after and taking the action to do it, but also having a focused intention about what you want to accomplish. So I suggest that people come up with their maybe top five long-term goals, the greater later, the things that they're going to achieve throughout their career. And then I break those down into the smaller steps that are going to take me to get there. So for example, I was working with an artist on this the other day. She wants to get to a point in her career where she is doing a national headlining tour. Now, in order to do that, let's say just very foundationally, you got to get a lot of experience on a lot of stages. So where can you start that the quickest? Singer-songwriter nights, where can you start that the quickest right now? Live streaming. So let's make a commitment that once a week, you're going to jump on Facebook Live, whether there's one person or 10,000 people watching you, and you're going to do a performance. And you're going to perform to that camera just like there was an audience just hanging out, sitting in little chairs right inside the lens. And put on a show and start doing those reps to, you know, to work it up. Now, as you do that, you're going to build a little bit more of a resume of live performance. As we're able to get back out into venues and perform, then you start contacting booking agents in town. For right now, there's all sorts of organizations all over the internet that are putting on entertainment events. And there's no reason that you can't jump on, seek those out and figure out who books them. So that idea that, well, there's no live shows, so I can't work towards that goal. We just need to find another creative way to, you know, to work towards it. So now that gets put on your calendar, and we find a handful of those that are short term actions that we can take to work towards these longer term goals. And so I have my calendars filled out with all the sessions that are going to happen throughout the week, and then all the time that's left within the day, within the time that I've considered my working hours, which is not working hours where I'm in a session with someone, but working hours where I'm working on my plan for prosperity. And so I have a specific time for myself. I suggest everyone determines that own time for them and then commits to it on a consistent basis. So you lay out your schedule. Maybe you got a part-time job right now. So like there's that's already on your schedule. Maybe you got a couple sessions here and there with some friends. You throw that on your schedule. Then you look at the time that's left over and you go to this list of these little short goals and start by just putting one a day on there. And then once you accomplish that for a couple weeks and you start to find a flow and some consistency with it, what I found is that things started to happen from that. I started getting calls for more gigs. The work that I was putting into that outreach or that research or learning a new skill set, then like magically I would get a call and somebody would be like, "Hey, do you know how to do that?" I'm like, "Well, yes, actually I do. I spent the last 2 months learning how to do that, you know, and now somebody needs that." And so
it feels like magic.
Yeah.
Right. It's incredible.
That happened.
And it's so much simpler than we make it out to be. The hard part is the consistency. And that's where we just have to have consistent persistence with what we do. Just know why we're doing it and put some purpose behind it so we have something to push us forward. And the simplest way is once you figure out what that purpose is, just ask yourself, how bad do I want this? And remember that there are countless other people that want it that bad or more that are moving to town right now or that are in your town or somewhere else that are going after those same goals. And so I think if we create just a little bit of structure, which I know isn't the most fun thing for creatives to try to like dive into, but just a little bit of structure within our schedule and shift it from being like, instead of, well, I'm looking at my schedule on my calendar, I'm looking at my prosperity plan or whatever creative name you come up with, it that just inspires me. Mm-hmm. You know, to work towards it. Sure. I think that can be a really powerful way. It's something that helped me really early on in my career. And it's a exercise that I work with artists on now to help them start to find that balance.
I like that.
That's awesome. So kind of keeping in step with that, something I'll share personally that I think is relevant to artists and music creators. Excuse me. But I was reading it in a book the other day called The Effective Executive. And he's talking about, it's just like Peter Drucker, I believe. And he's talking about executives having to write a big report or do some sort of creative endeavor where, you know, sometimes because you are the leader. You have to put together a big slide deck, or you've got to put together a presentation, or you've got to put together an essay, or you've got to put together, you know, you're writing for a grant or whatever it is, but something that's like a big undertaking. And what he said was specifically to get the first real draft off the ground, which is kind of like what you're saying, Brad, you want to block enough time off to like really go down the rabbit hole and go far enough with it to where you can get in your creative zone, you can get in the inspiration zone, you can channel out what it is that you need to say or produce or create in that moment to a degree that it's actually a solid first draft. It's not just an idea. And then it's about scheduling little blocks of time to go and review it. But you can't, what he's saying is you cannot get the same caliber of work done if you just go, okay, I'm going to spend 60 minutes or something writing this massive report. He's like, no, you need to block off 4 hours for the first swing at it. And then later you can come back in 15 minute intervals even and scan it, or, you know, listen to it in your car, you know, as you're driving back and forth. And then let it kind of sink in and go and continually refine it. But I thought that was an interesting idea that, you know, you really do have to kind of get enough time and enough, like remove yourself from the different things that are coming up, your notifications, your emails, your phone, whatever it is, that all the distractions, long enough to pull all that out of yourself to the degree that it's at least, you know, like the skeleton, like you said. And then it's easy to come back in little short chunks and iterate on it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So going back to what you're talking about, Sean, building out these things in your calendar, it may make sense for creatives to have a certain amount of those times where they're like, this is my time to come up with something new. And it's, you know, 4 hours that I'm going in and I'm just going to get weird or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
But then you absolutely have to put in those 15, 30 minute intervals where you're like, I'm going to go back and review this thing that I created last week. Now that it's had some time to stew or something like that. So
it's like, you can't go to the gym for 6 hours and then like, you know, lift all this weight and then wake up the next morning and you look like the person you want to look. it just doesn't happen. Right? Right. It's like, it's you doing that all the time. And sometimes you got to do the big marathon pushes, but a lot of times you got to pull back. Mm-hmm. There's a book called The Slight Edge, which you guys mm-hmm. know I'm a nerd for. That book is everything in terms of like what we're talking about, like mm-hmm. the small steps and setting goals that are actually like responsible and not just lofty. And then if you do have lofty goals, figuring out like what are the smaller steps to get there. So I think that really getting that to stack up with the calendar is everything. And then just being, I think also understanding that we're talking about like creativity, making art, making music. This is one of the oldest things on this planet. And we're trying to make it fit into a commercial landscape, and it's going to have challenges. It's like a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't feel comfortable, but what should feel comfortable is the way that we do it. And I think that if you don't take anything else away from this, it's like your uniqueness, your individuality is actually what allows you to do that. Because you'll figure out after a while, you try Sean's scheduling, you'll realize like, actually, I'm really hyper creative at these times, so I should schedule my creativity here instead of over here in the end. And, you know, I should only take sessions in the morning and the afternoon, right? You'll figure out like what works for you. And I think that you have to at least sort of swing at it with some of these like tried and true concepts from other industries that have managed to figure out how to scale crazy ideas and sort of bring them into what you're doing.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I just read that. It's a new recommendation, Brad. I've read that Slight Edge book. Right, it is everything, man, because it's both things in the sense of you're chipping away at the stone, but you're doing it from a perspective of what Sean's saying is you're fundamentally have your stuff organized, long-term, short-term goals, and then you can chip away at the stone one by one. You're consistent at it.
Right. The phrase in that book is, it's easy to do. It's just as easy not to do. And I think too often we're like, oh, we'll not do. I'll do it later. I'll do it later. I'll do it later. Like, we're all saying, I'll do it later to something else, like right now in our lives. If we're like, we should probably start on that right now.
Right.
Yeah. I always tell people like your number one hurdle is you, right? It's your limiting beliefs, your mindset, your tendencies to procrastinate, or, a lot of times it's hiding from your greatness too. I think that's a common theme for people where they feel their greatness kind of inside of themselves, and they're like, man, I could do this at the level, you know, I could be great. I could be one of the, you know, one of the greatest or whatever it is, you know, and they have those sort of inklings that's in them because it is, right? It's in everybody, I believe, to some degree, it really is. But what happens is that's such a scary proposition for people to really be dedicated to like living their best lives and being like the hero of their own journey. And so they'll just subconsciously put things in their own way. And whether it's a distraction or whether it's, you know, it comes down to pitfalls. I learned this really cool way of setting goals and, you know, basically creating the outcomes that you want in your life. And it's quite simple and elegant. And it essentially, you know, on one side of the paper, you like list all of your resources that you have to achieve this outcome. And you just need to know that you need more than enough resources to achieve it. That's all you need to know. And if you don't have enough resources, then you create a plan to get the resources that you need. Once you do have enough resources, you make a list of the behaviors that you would need to do to actually achieve that outcome in your life. And then finally, you make a list of the pitfalls, the things that would get in your way. And you just kind of put that on your wall. And I mean, I'm telling you, it's like one of the most powerful things. It's leaning into the behaviors that you know are good for you and keeping the things that would distract you or your own pitfalls out in the open enough to where you can't, you know, you're like, okay, I know I'm hiding from something right now. I know I'm doing what I should be doing to, you know, get the outcome that I'm committed
to. And a lot of people feel that way. I think that, you know, we're talking about producers of music, but like, I mean, I have friends who are millionaires from like the tech industry and they're like, what should I do? Like, right. So it's not even necessarily about like your circumstances, about truly like what you just said about willing to take that risk and step into the thing that you really want to step into, because maybe it's scary. It's like, oh, you're gonna have to change this part of your life that you're so comfortable in. And that's really the demon that we're facing, is like, something's going to change for you to accept your greatness. That's the only like path forward. Right.
That actually goes back to what we were saying earlier about not finishing stuff psychologically. Cause I think some people can get caught up in, if I finish this, then it's done. Then what am I going to do? Yeah. So in other words, they kind of hide behind the process, you know, and it can hold you back.
Busyness, right? Right. I'm busy.
Right.
I'm busy mindset.
Right.
It's a long day.
Yeah. People get caught up in being busy, man. And they, you know, versus, you know, accomplishing things or being productive or active, you know? And so I catch myself, you know, cause it's obviously just a, you know, a sort of social norm to be like, oh, I know you're busy, you know? But I'll try to stop you. I'm like, I try not to think about myself as being busy. I genuinely want to help you and hear what you have to say. And, you know, that's a big mindset for people, because why be busy? What does that actually indicate? Is that getting you, you know, the results that you actually want in your life? I know some people that, you know, are getting the results that they want that you would call busy, and they would certainly say they're busy. But I know other people that are getting results just bigger that, you know, actually move through life a little more slowly and more intentionally.
It's relative. Busyness is relative.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a lot to be said.
When you consider the word busy, there's a connotation of like stress involved in it too. Mm-hmm. And because when you hear that, it's like, oh man, I'm so busy, you know, and it creates a sense of like stress and anxiety, which is generally like anti-creative, sometimes can incite some creativity. But can usually halt like productivity. And I've recently got in the habit of not saying busy intentionally, and changing the word busy whenever I think to say busy, saying productive.
Yeah.
And I found it to really calm myself with the amount of things that we have going on at the studio and the different projects that we have going. And I was talking to an artist earlier, and he's like, man, how are you know, doing all this stuff? I'm like, well, I'm just, you know, just focus on growth, productivity, and not about getting overwhelmed, you know, with all of that. And so for artists that have so many things to do in the modern music industry, aside from just creating music, they can get super overwhelmed really quickly and become really uninspired because they feel so busy or so overwhelmed with all the things that they have to do that it's just not much fun anymore. You know, it just feels like work. And I think that can happen for producers also. But it's funny that you said that, as that was just something recently that I've sort of changed that perspective on and tried to just totally take the word out of my vocabulary.
I love that. Yeah. Mindset nice. Shift. That's what that is. It's like being willing to see like, oh, this isn't working for me. I need to stop doing this. Self-honesty.
Yeah. Just the words that you're saying, I believe have power too, you know, and we all like to say things like music has power, you know, it's a vibration, you know, and when you're speaking these things out, you know, I'm so busy. I've got so much going on. I don't know what to do. It's like, just by saying that out loud, like you said, it can bring up that level of, you know, of uncertainty. So I would say, you know, just personally for people that are like, okay, well, how do I actually stop feeling so busy without, you know, seeing a lack in productivity? There's some interesting frameworks that I've stumbled onto. One of them is called Getting Things Done. And it's a sort of classic executive productivity model. It's a little too complex to describe, you know, in the stream, but I highly recommend people, you know, to check that out if they need a system. It's a system for compartmentalizing the things that actually have to get done and understanding where those would exist in your workflow to make sure that you don't have to remember them. The whole idea is that he says that your mind is for being creative, not for constantly remembering things. You shouldn't have to sit there with this massive like memory bank of all the crap that you have to do just, you know, in your brain all the time. That's going to take up so much headspace that it's actually going to sap your ability to create the spaciousness that you need to be creative and to think creatively about, okay, out of all the things that I could be doing, what's the one thing that I want to actually move forward right now? What's the thing that could have this big exponential impact on my life that I can kind of, you know, see because I'm not just, you know, answering every, you know, thing that goes off. So that's a good one. Working in sprints is something that I've started with the home team since we had to go remote with the COVID and everything. Started doing Scrum and agile management stuff where we start to think about, you know, a thing that we can actually bring into existence over the next 2 weeks. And every 2 weeks we have an opportunity to again take a big survey of what's going on in our lives and say, okay, now what do I want to make happen over the next 2 weeks? And so that's cool. Another really cool one that I recommend people who feel like they have a lot to do, especially agile is great if you have a team. If you can learn to, let's say it'll take your teamwork, your team productivity through the roof.
What is that process called?
Agile management. And Scrum is connected with that. And it's, you know, it's all based around this idea that you're having stand-ups with your team every morning. And you take just a few minutes to check in. And so we do this on like a Google Meet, but you could do it on Slack or whatever you're using. And you go, okay, we're on here at 9 a.m., 10 a.m., or whatever it is. And we go, okay, we go around a circle and three things I did yesterday and three things that I'm going to do today. And then do I need any help with anything? And we just understand there's somewhere either a Trello board or we use like monday.com, which is a task management system that kind of shows the associated tasks to create this outcome within 2 weeks. But you could totally do this by yourself. You could go, okay, like check in with myself at 9 a.m. What are the three things that I got done yesterday? What are the three things I'm going to do today? And you know, who do I need help from in order to accomplish this? And, you know, so it's sort of that teamwork mentality. You begin working as if you have this giant team, you know, because you probably do, whether you realize it or not. You know, you have these relationships, hopefully, if you've been doing this for even a few years, And that's why going back to, we can't stress how important it is. Like, the relationships are everything. I said that last week in my top three COVID pivots live stream that we did was like, that's the very first thing somebody should do, I think, in this scenario, because no matter what, people are still there. And if anything, as things get more techy and kind of crazy, your humanity is even more appealing to people. If the fact that you're also kind of scared about,
right,
you know,
that's,
everything,
that's what I was going to say, is that
can really connect with people.
The playing field is leveled because all of a sudden everyone has a shared experience. Every living human on this planet has a shared experience of coronavirus and what it's like to have to hunker down, readapt, rechange new practices. And so there's this level of like, we understand each other in a way that who knows when the last time this was. And because of that, you're seeing us able to work through social issues, economic issues. We can start to talk about these things that have been tabled for too long. Mm-hmm. And so I think this level of like relatability to each other allows us to understand like, man, everyone I know is having to like dive into like tech stuff. Everyone I know is like all of a sudden recording at their house or trying to like make their own mixes. And so what we can really do to what you're saying is be the people who are like, hey, I figured this thing out. You know, what can I share with you? Like, you know, Sean and I were talking at the beginning, like trying to like talking about like CRMs and like, what can we automate? And like, you're like, what do you know? Like, what do you know? And just trying to piece it together. And I think you're right. The humanity of it, like the people part of it, it becomes more and more important. So the more you're like willing to be like, hey, I'm trying to figure this out. People are like, yeah, I'm also struggling with this. If you don't believe me, you can go on LinkedIn and like start thumbing through the posts of people who are like, I've been applying for jobs and no one's responding. There's like 3,000 comments. People are like, yeah, me too, but I'm here for you. You know, send me your resume. And, you know, so there's always detractors and stuff too, but like people are out there going through the same thing. People are out there, you know, we are all artists, all musicians from top to bottom, trying to figure out what to do. So I think just being like, you don't have to like play it cool. Like you got it figured out and like you have the solution, but just more like, you have value to bring in terms of like how you solve problems and that, you know, that we're all in this together. So
it's awesome. God, I feel better now. Thank you. I really do.
You're not alone. And you are enough. You are enough. I think too, like we're all like, oh, I'm not enough. I need more people or I need more of this, need more of that. But like if it's in you, if you can feel it, mm-hmm. if you feel like greatness, like you're enough, because that's what people are responding to. That's what people jump on board with. That's what they get excited about. So just know that like, if you feel it inside of you, like that's a beautiful place to be starting.
Yeah. Awesome. That really resonates with me personally. Just, you know, having to rethink the organization that I started a couple of years ago that, you know, really revolves around getting people together. You know, it's meant to, designed to be an actual community, physical community for the creatives here in Nashville. And so we're obviously, you know, have been thrown way off by all of this. And, you know, it took me kind of that, you know, shift of going, well, don't I claim to be a creative person? You know, when this stuff happens, when things are severely disrupted, the most creative people win, actually. You know, the people who can find those solutions for the artists right now and can rethink what they're doing according to the new paradigm that we're in, those are the ones that are going to win in the long run, as things maybe it goes back to normal or whatever quicker than we think it's going to, but still things are progressing. So there's people right now who are getting ahead of the curve and who are checking in with the clients that they used to work with and saying, hey, you know, anything I could do to serve you right now, what do you got going on? How are you planning on getting to your fans? You know, what is it, you know, are you recording? Are you writing? Are you trying to do live streaming? What's going on? How can I help? How can I be a part of it? You're amazing. And I want to, you know, support you through all this. Right. You know, like that's the stuff that the people that are doing that are going to come out of the other end of this with much stronger relationships. And then probably with a new skill set that prepares them for the future in a much bigger way, you know? So I think that's a good segue into, you know, what maybe our final question. We'll kind of keep rapping until the full 90 minutes goes, but the sort of, you know, how are we helping music evolve question, right? This is a question that I, you know, as we were going back and forth talking about this, doing this panel and kicking around ideas, you know, it was kind of something that naturally fell out that I was like, yeah, that's actually perfect for the brand or whatever. Yeah. So, I can't really claim that it was my question to pose as much as, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, in understanding. I think it was Brad who kind of put it out there. Like, it's, I feel like it's a responsibility as somebody who's, you know, established myself in this industry to actually move the industry forward or something like that. And then I think it was Greg that was like, so the question is, how are we helping music evolve? So let's just talk about that for a minute. Why don't you start if you want
to? Sure, sure. Yeah, no. And I think it's very apropos that, you know, this is helping our music evolve. I feel like it's very, very future-proof of what you've created.
Hopefully.
I'm very centric on people as being the part of how this evolves, being more inclusive, to women, to people of color, to our, you know, LGBTQ family, to everybody that has sort of like been waiting for their shot and waiting for someone to sort of like leave the keys by the gate or leave the gate open. That's kind of like where we're at now, because it's changing so much. People are scrambling for answers and solutions. Like, the people who are kind of like ready to propose new ways of going about things and doing things that are inclusive, I feel like that's sort of how we help it evolve. You know, the recording industry, and this is very hard for like a lot of people, including myself, to come to terms with, is like, it began on extraction. It extracted music from poor people. It extracted music without paying them royalties. We're still not paying people royalties. I checked the average on Spotify. It's not 0.0043 cents per stream. It's like more like 0.0015 cents per stream.
Good Lord.
So there's not a fair playing field in terms of, so it's built on taking from people. And where we're at now is the entire world's done with being taken from. And the world is looking to be replenished. It's looking for people's, you know, not just their careers and their, you know, their financial well-being, but their social well-being, their mental well-being, their health. All these things are coming back into question. So I think that, you know, our opportunity now is the slate. I don't want to say it's like wiped clean, but like damn near, right? Like, touring's never going to look the same, which was the major like driving profit of all of this. Like, we all got sessions booked based upon how our artists were going to tour and sell stuff on all that stuff. So the money has shifted and it's in new places. So it presents us the opportunity for us to think about, okay, how can we go about this in a way that serves people, is good to people? The whole supply chain from top to bottom is something that is like people are inspired by. And there's a lot of examples of this in big business, like the B Corporation, the Benefit Corporation. They certify businesses for how good they are socially, how good they are for the economy, how good they are to their people, the whole supply chain top to bottom. Like, Ben & Jerry's is a great example of this. Newman's Own is a great example of this. Like, these are companies that responded to earlier trends that were really messed up in the processing industries. Like, the Industrial Revolution was really bad for a lot of stuff, right? So it took 50, 60 years for these companies to be like, oh, we should donate our profits to charity, or we should get behind things we care about, right? So we're at that in the music industry now, where we've spent the last 20 years putting artists in power. So artists are now in power, and they have the ability to have a strong independent music business. And now, like, the gatekeepers have like realized, like, oh, we need to think differently about how we reach people, about the value we bring, about what they care about. So there's this epicenter for us to actually have, like, you know, some real change. And the only way it's going to be sustained is if we, you know, we lean into it. So I think the evolution of music right now, in terms of like the stuff we make, the business we run, it's going to be kind of just back to like the people we bring into it, and that willingness to do good by people in the process.
Nice.
Nice.
The future looks awesome, man.
It's pretty good, huh? It's a good future.
Yeah. That's incredible. Wow, what a powerful statement. I would second everything that you say. I think that something that comes to mind when we think about evolution and future is like, when I was first getting started out in the industry, and I was in school for audio production, and the teachers, you know, they tell you like how very challenging it was, and how hard it is, and how many hours you got to work, and you know, how little opportunities there are, and how you got to just kind of hustle through, and you better love what you're doing because you're not going to make a lot of money, you know, and all that stuff. And there's this idea, or I guess like study, that was done about how like we look back at like the past is always being like kind of like better, but we're looking at like the current time and like the future is being like always like on edge about like things are so bad and so rough. But if we could only go back to the good old days. But then when they did the study, they looked back at like the good old days. And in every sort of generation, there was a scary thing that was focused around most people's mind that made them feel like, oh, if I could only go back to that time when things were so much better. And so I think the whole idea of evolving in music and evolving in our culture and like community is just looking at positively towards right now as opportunity for growth and looking to the future as an awesome thing, as opposed to looking back at the past as like, oh, I wish this could have happened now, but just like totally forgetting that and focusing on what we have the opportunity to do now. So for the evolving landscape of music production, I would really invite people to look into the technology that is evolving, like immersive audio and mixing in Dolby Atmos, live streaming, the things that are on the forefront of sort of the next generation. And if you're just getting rolling with something and you're trying to find your space in this industry, I would dive into those things, the things that are untapped or sort of less tapped, you know, and continue to educate yourself and, you know, and grow and not be looking back into the past as to what made other people be able to get to where they're at, but what's going to help you get to where you're at based on the challenges that you can solve that need to be solved now that you'll be able to bring into the future. And that's what I would really focus on.
So yeah, like the principles versus your strategy. It's like the principles behind the strategies of those who have gone before you, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I read every day and I'm often reading and thinking about, what can I learn out of the philosophy behind this person? Not necessarily like always the tangible actions that they took, but what was the thought process and the way that they approach things? And then how can I think creatively about how to apply that to what I'm doing? And I think that's what I really hope that people get out of these discussions. And everyone had some amazing points on philosophy and idea behind these principles.
Right on, man. I couldn't agree more. You're making me think of, were you talking about philosophy earlier? And you're talking about philosophy right now, but you're making me think of survivalist bias, which is basically, it goes back to World War II and the fighter planes would come back and they would assess the damage. And as far as the part of the airplane where the damage was, it'd be like the wings and the tail. And so they said, okay, we need to reinforce the wings and the tail because this is where the plane's getting damaged. When in reality, those are the planes that survived. Those are the ones that came back and they're able to examine them. So really what we need to be doing is figuring that we need to reinforce the middle where the pilot is and where the engine is. We need to do the opposite of what this graph is showing us, because those are the planes that didn't survive. And I think maybe that's a way we could apply that to
mind. That's an awesome way of looking at stuff.
That's amazing.
Yeah, survivalist bias. And it's in everything. And one thing as far as music goes, a common thing we always argue about, it's like analog tape. You know, some people love it, some people don't like it, whatever it is. But there is survivalist bias in it because so many great records are made on tape. You know, I think like a Pink Floyd record or whatever it is, you know, whether or not you like Pink Floyd, you know, they're one of the greatest record making bands to ever go into studio. And that was their whole thing, was like, we're going to go and just make great records. But if Pink Floyd were around today, the records would still be amazing and they wouldn't even use tape. So that's survivalist bias. So people are biased toward tape because it's, no pun intended, but because it's survived, because those records are so good, they've survived. Sorry. Awesome. So, I mean, that would be, I guess, my short answer to how do we help music evolve is like, let's not get caught up in survivalist bias. Let's move it forward.
Yeah. Cool.
Brent, that's good.
Yeah, I love that. Kind of like empirical thought versus subjective, you know, opinions and conclusions and stuff like that. So yeah, I think those are really, really cool things. Some things that I think, you know, current people who are sort of, you know, learning music production, diving into music production should probably consider, you know, one is like kind of what you're saying about, you know, not overthinking the tools that you're using to create the vision, right?
Big time.
And go back to what we were saying at the beginning, sometimes the constraints, it's like, oh, well, if you can only get it out through, you know, this tool through a live stream, then how do you make the very best live stream? How do you make that serve you? And, you know, and specifically, kind of going back to what you were saying, Brad, is the industry's in this point of radical disruption in terms of the money flow. And right now there are people that are being extremely creative and people that are throwing money at people that are being extremely creative in learning what is the next sort of, you know, wave of new means to monetize people, monetize the fans, right? With the art of the artist. There's interesting things now to where people can create these tokens around, you know, like a crypto token, a blockchain token, around a piece, a work of art or a song or something like that. And then you can essentially sell off pieces of that and, you know, have an actual sort of, you know, share of ownership in this work of art.
And like an electronic bond kind of almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Selling bonds.
But, you know, there's so much to be done. And I think that what you're saying about Pink Floyd, that's probably a good thought experiment for somebody. Is like, think of the best band that you love that was making the best records that you think are amazing. You go, okay, well, Pink Floyd was around right now. What would they do? Right. You know,
what will blow your mind is there is a Pink Floyd right now, but they're called something else. They're a different band. They're called Foals, or they're called Finish Ticket, or they're called, you know, Tame Impala. Like, it is around us right now. It's kind of like what you're saying, the good old days. Like, they're among us. Like, we're in the good old days. We're always in the good old days. Every new day is the good old days. And I think as soon as we realize that's happening around us, and we can sort of like lean into that. And I think for producers, we have to be like really like agile with that and like willing to like lean into that and see like, okay, how can I demo everything, right? Like, it's never been easier than ever to try the stuff that everyone uses. Like, all the plugins every pro uses, you can demo them all, right? Versus like 20, 30 years ago, it's like, you couldn't just demo an LA two-way compressor. You couldn't just demo a Neumann U47. You could rent one, you could pay for it, but it wasn't going to be free. You'd be like, man, that was $500 and I don't like this mic. So it's so much easier now to try the tools that everyone's using. So again, like, the playing field's like leveled. And I think that when we, just accept that, we can play with that.
Right. And now it's the tools are... they're so good now. I mean, you talk
so
about
just good.
Like, I mean, it's one thing that blows my mind every day, just the technology we have and like what it actually does, you know, compared to even like 10 years ago, man. It's just awesome.
Yeah. I wish a U47 still cost $500.
I think you're saying to rent.
Right. Yeah. Not to buy. No, but to rent. Like, rent one.
Then, like, could you imagine that being able to stack up all those or those old Fairchilds that were just sitting in the back of radio station back alleys?
Same thing with Neves. Like,
love to have some of those.
Bryn Avril started Bryn Avril Electronics because he, like, in the 80s when all the studios were ditching those Neve consoles for like all the digital shit, they were just like throwing them away. And he's like, I'll take these. And then boom, you have a major company. So I'd ask people like, what's being thrown out right now that you can turn into gold? Like, what's the garbage right now that can be gold?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
There's always that too, you know, going the opposite direction of everybody else. That's actually a strategy that works a lot of times too, you know, sort of contrarian thinking of, okay, well, everybody's moving in this direction, so we're going to move in a complete
counterculture,
right? Like, I'm going to create like real lo-fi, crunchy, you know, hissy kind of music and sell it on cassette tapes. You know, there's, you know, guys in town that are doing that.
It's cool.
So that's certainly a good point in terms of not, you know, you don't necessarily have to buy into the futurism that's going on. If you can sort of create a significant lane for yourself and, you know, leverage what's, you know, already been done in the past.
But you can't stay where you're at. That's the thing, is like, you can't go home, but you can't stay here. Like,
right.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Like, that's where we're at. Like,
you go somewhere. Right?
You don't got to go in the future. You don't got to embrace all this, like, you know, post COVID stuff. You can go straight back and start making magazines, but you can't stay where you're at because there's nothing there. There's no one's going to be there. Mm-hmm. People, right. Fans, businesses, money, time, content, it's not there.
Yeah. So,
right.
You got something?
Well, I was going to just absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I mean, that's what being an entrepreneur is making those chess moves, you know, figuring out what those chess moves are. And 90% of the time, the chess move is probably going to be the incorrect one, but you learn from it and you just make the next one.
Mm-hmm. I like the chess analogy too, because it's a lot of times it's really just about learning the actual mechanics of the game itself, not necessarily, you know, having to be so smart. It's understanding how to develop your pieces and understanding really what the strengths of each piece is. So
it's interesting with chess, because chess, the smartness, the brain part comes into how fast you do it, not necessarily like the move. Like you can take 2 years to make that move. It's the right move. It's the right move. Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right.
So a couple of takeaways before we wrap up. I think we're coming to the end of the stream now. Couple of takeaways that I'm hearing, and while I'm saying this, you guys can think of any last thoughts you want to leave with people as well. But, you know, like Brad was saying, do something. Like, don't just expect things to go back to normal. That's not a good choice. I think we can all at least agree on that. You know, look for ways to differentiate yourself from other people. Get very clear on what your biggest strengths are. And if you can align some of those strengths with some of this new technology, then that could potentially be a great move right now. Look, you know, like take ownership of pushing the conversation forward yourself. You know, I think that was a sort of big, you know, aha moment for me, just, you know, in terms of like, hey, if you're going to be a big part of the industry in some form or fashion, you got to take ownership for making things happen and for pushing it forward, no matter what the circumstances are. You got to be a leader. You know, another thing, leaders are readers. That was one thing that popped into my head. So for you guys, you know, you heard us all mention different books. This is super important that I can't stress enough for people. Like, you see further because you stand on the shoulders of giants, as they say. So distilling those principles down that other people have used to become successful is absolutely imperative to the journey, and being able to take that and then kind of synthesize what you see and make it work for you. So, you know, lean into your relationships, get great at communicating with people, keeping up with your people, use a CRM. If you know what that is, if you don't, look it up. Do you guys have anything, any closing thoughts or anything?
Just get out there and just ask. If I could recommend one more thing to watch, it's the TEDx Nardwar talk. Nardwar is a Canadian radio show host who's interviewed everybody under the sun. And the way he's gotten all of his interviews is because he's just asked. And he has this TED talk about just asking. And I think that, you know, wherever you want to go, whatever you want to do, you're not going to be able to do it alone. But fear not. You can just ask. You can just connect with people and it'll lead you somewhere great. So awesome. Lean in.
Awesome. Sean, you got anything to leave with everybody?
Yeah. You know, the thing that I keep coming back to as we're talking about all these philosophies and ideas of evolving is the importance of persistence and consistent action. And that reminds me of the story that I heard from a speaker named Les Brown, who's like just one of the most inspiring stories that I've heard. It's about the Chinese bamboo tree. And he tells a story about this guy that's in Far East Asia and in his little village. He goes out every morning, he waters this piece of dirt that he has, you know, seeds under. And but everyone in the town is like walking by him and sees him every morning watering this thing. And it's not growing. And they're like, I think this dude might be a little crazy. He keeps going out there watering this thing. It's not going anywhere. But he knew that it was that bamboo takes a long time to grow. It actually takes about 5 years before it sprouts out of the ground. And the reason for that is that whole time that it's being watered, it's growing down like deep into the soil and creating really deep, strong roots. Once it sprouts out of the ground, after 5 years, it grows like 60 feet tall in like 6 weeks. And so the fun question is, how long did it take to grow? Did it take 6 weeks to grow that tall, or, you know, 5 years and 6 weeks to grow?
Overnight success, right?
And we hear about that all the time. This idea of like, oh, this guy just blew up out of nowhere, just went viral out of, you know, with nothing, just threw a video up and now he's the top artist in the world. And this idea of overnight success in the entertainment industry and business, and it's very clear that it's not. It's a 10-year, 20-year overnight success.
Yeah.
That happens through that persistence. So if you're out there working through this, you're listening because you're trying to find solutions and looking for some hope and some direction to dive through it, just know that it takes time and that we're always going to continue to be growing. And the idea is that everything that you're watering now is growth. It just may not be growing in the exact tangible visual direction that you see it happening. But eventually that's going to sprout and things will explode. And I think we've all seen that happen in our careers. And I feel like that story is a great testament to just life in the music industry.
Beautiful analogy, man.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. That's awesome. I guess my final thought would be, obviously this whole year is, I guess a word would be, it's all humbled us. And so I would say, you know, use that, like kind of stay humble, because that's where you really dig down deep and you can really challenge yourself to be better, you know? So I know it's tough for everybody out there now, but you know, if you kind of stay humble and you know, respect people and look up to people, and maybe through that you can gain some new mentors or be a mentor to yourself if you dig deep enough, you know? So stay humble.
Thanks for listening to Helping Our Music Industry Evolve. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to share it with a homie. If you want weekly strategies delivered to your inbox, be sure to subscribe to my newsletter at homie.news. And if you want to grow with a community of music industry professionals, become a member at homeformusic.org. Peace.